What is up, my fellow side hustlers? This is your friend and host, Ryan Helms. I want to welcome you to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. Every week, I bring you interviews with everyday people who are creating extraordinary side hustles, and this week is no different. If you're looking to take your side hustle to the next level as well, you need to check out the Side Hustle Journal. It's the only journal on the market focused on helping side hustlers like you expedite the process of starting and growing a profitable business in your spare time, no matter how busy life may be. And for a limited time, I'm giving away a free copy of the Side Hustle Journal to anyone who leaves a review on the podcast. All you need to do is leave a review, take a screenshot, and send me an email to hello@gritandhustle.co. That's hello@gritandhustle.co. I'll send you the link to pick up your free copy. All you need to do is cover shipping. Now, let's jump into this episode with Andrew Deitch. We'll talk about how he dropped out of college to join a multi-level marketing company, why he isn't doing that now, and how it led into his current side hustle as host on the Andrew Deitch podcast. Andrew will share his three L's to putting out an amazing podcast. So if you have ever thought about launching your own podcast, you don't want to miss this episode. So now I'll shut up and get right into it.
I'm from suburbs of Atlanta, kind of northeast Atlanta. Pretty normal kid growing up, as normal as you can be, I guess. Kind of a little bit dorky. I didn't realize I was as dorky as I was, but looking back on it, I'm like, I was pretty nerdy, which kind of ties into maybe what I'm doing right now with some cool technology stuff. But right now I host a podcast, the Andrew Deitch podcast, very original name, as you can tell. But basically on my podcast, I talk to pretty much anybody who I feel like is kind of doing something against the grain, doing something interesting. Maybe they're really big on traveling. Maybe they're an entrepreneur. Maybe they just have a really cool story. Something really awesome happened to them. You know, maybe they have just a really inspiring story. And I really just wanted to create that podcast because I listen to a lot of podcasts. I know a lot of cool people, and I wanted to be able to help showcase their stories to the world. And at the same time, grow my network and expose myself to more cool people, and it's been going really well.
So is this your full-time gig, or you have a job, or what?
It is definitely a side hustle. So it is slowly turning. I am creating a little bit of income from it right now, which is awesome. Hopefully I'll be able to transition a little bit out, but of course with the side hustle comes double the income, which is awesome. But for the past 2 years I've been working at an escape game place, which is pretty cool.
That's interesting. I just interviewed a guy, Brendan Doubles, on Thursday, I think, and his side hustle is about helping helping escape rooms market their businesses.
That's really cool. Yeah. That's really awesome. Yeah, it's a cool business working at an escape game place. They're very fun environments, and you never know what you're gonna get.
Yeah. So you're obviously have several things going on in life, the job, the podcast, and you do all your podcasts in person. So you're traveling around all around Atlanta doing that. I'm sure you have a social life as well. So what about this starting a podcast and starting a side hustle? What made you want to do that?
So like I said, I listen to podcasts a lot, and in 2012 or so, I got exposed to the world of being an entrepreneur, I guess. And I hadn't ever really thought about it that way before. I was in college. I was a freshman at GCSU in Milledgeville. And you know, I was having a great time. It was a really fun school, lots of great friends there. But I was exposed to an MLM company, so like a network marketing company. Some people, you know, oh, the pyramid scheme kind of thing. But for a lot of people, that was a huge introduction to the world of kind of owning your own business and doing your own thing, and just kind of being force fed through the system, if you will. You know, go to high school, get good grades, go to college, get good grades, get a good job, and whatever. And I was taking that so seriously that I actually dropped out of college after my freshman year and was like pursuing this MLM side business full time. And I was like, I'm going to go for it. I basically said, if I half-ass it, I'm going to get half the results. If I go full speed ahead, I'm going to get all the results. And I learned a ton during those years about, you know, myself. I moved out with one of my friends. That was the first time because before I was living in a dorm, now I was living with one of my buddies that we were working together, and the dynamics of that and trying to make a business work. And I ended up having to pick up another job because it wasn't making the right money and all of this crazy stuff. But anyways, that's kind of where my, I guess, entrepreneurial journey started. And the real thing that I got from that was all the self-development stuff. I think a lot of entrepreneur types, or, you know, maybe not even entrepreneurs, but I guess you would say people that are a little more of a go-getters, or I don't even know exactly how to describe it, but a lot of people,
ambitious people.
Yeah, ambitious. That's a great word. And one thing that business exposed me to was, number one, ambitious people, but also a lot of self-development, reading a lot of great books like Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. That one like opened my eyes like crazy. What other books did I read? The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy. Like, just realizing that there was more to making money than just like having a job. So anyways, that kind of led me up to a couple of years after that, I decided that I wanted to travel more. And so I did a bunch of traveling and stuff. And
so let's back up really quick, because
I was kind of rambling.
I just want to touch on the MLM, the multi-level marketing thing. Like, what were you doing and what happened there?
So basically this company, I don't have any problem with saying their name. They're still around, actually. It's called Vima, and they had like a liquid multivitamin product that they actually had infused into an energy drink. And so this energy drink was the main product that was really kind of this hot product for like college kids and stuff. And so basically in an MLM environment, you have products that you're selling, but also you're trying to recruit other people into the business that might also be, that might also sell the product as well. And so that's where a lot of people get kind of weirded out with the whole quote unquote pyramid scheme kind of thing, where it's like, are you really selling the product, or are you selling an opportunity with just a promise of making money, but not actually? And the thing was, is I ended up making money in that company. It was great. We had little teams basically of, we would host home events where we would invite people in to learn about the products, learn about the opportunity, and let people decide at the end of it if they wanted to get involved. And, some people took it to a little bit of a level of being kind of spammy about it, being really, you know, if you don't join our team, then screw you or whatever. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on here, but
whatever you want to do, man.
But, you know, and they'd be like, if you don't join this, you're an idiot and you're blind to seeing the opportunities, bro. And like, people just got kind of douchey about it. But at the end of the day, it was really just exposing people to an opportunity and a product. Hey, you like the product? Cool. Become a customer. Hey, you like the opportunity? Become a sales rep and join our team and spread the word about this as well. And, there was a lot of negativity surrounding that. You know, people get kind of mad when you're trying to sell them stuff sometimes. A lot of people say no. You send out a lot of invites, you get a lot of no's, you get a lot of no-shows, and it teaches you to deal with adversity. That was another big thing that it taught me. But yeah, that was pretty much what we were kind of doing there.
Yeah, very cool. I know a lot of people that get into starting a side hustle or wanting to be an entrepreneur or whatever it is, like, that's often their first, that's like the gateway drug, so to speak,
it is.
You know, and for some people it's a great opportunity, and they it it leads into other things, but a lot of people will get a bad taste in their mouth.
For sure.
And you know, maybe it's like they may think like, oh, this entrepreneur thing's, you know, not for me. So to anyone listening, I would definitely, if you are in kind of like an MLM type environment or company, you know, and you have a bad experience, don't think that that's all there is out there. And, you know, definitely get out there, explore, find other things. Like there's something out there for everyone, right?
Yeah,
I think
sure.
It takes a certain type of person to be in that environment. So if you're very much like a introvert and don't really like talking to people, like MLM probably isn't the right path for you. So
there are interesting, a lot of it, they do push like in person, go out there, you gotta be charismatic, you gotta, that was a lot of things that it taught me too, was to be public speaker, go out and meet people, talk to random people, that strangers that you that start, spark up a conversation, all that kind of stuff. But also there's a lot of like, nowadays there's a lot of internet lead kind of funnels that people make that they can get leads on the web, and then they end up getting calls and they have a team that helps them, you know. So there's ways that you can be an introvert in that business, but it is a lot, it is very challenging. And another thing is that a lot of that is kind of a long-term thing, and also about when you join the company. If you kind of join the company when it's small, and it blows up, there's a chance that you could kind of ride that wave. But for example, like Advocare or something like that, they've been around for a really long time. The money's kind of already been made there as far as the fortunes that have been created. Not to say that it couldn't be created now if you join today, but joining a somewhat new company, there's a higher chance that you're going to be able to kind of hit that boom and kind of ride the wave a little bit. And that's kind of where the hype sort of comes in, where the scamminess sort of comes in as well. But like you said, a lot of people, it is kind of that gateway drug. And I actually have had a few people reach out to me recently about joining other MLM companies, and quite frankly, I'm just not interested, but because I know how it feels to be on the other end of that, I always try to be as respectful as possible. And actually, I tend to, I say, hey, you know what, I'm not looking for that opportunity right now, but here's a whole bunch. I used to be in something very similar. Here's a bunch of resources that really helped me out when I was in there. So I send them a lot of audio books or things like that, because I know that, that those things help me a lot. And I want to show them that, hey, even though I'm not interested in joining your thing, I want you to keep doing it, because I know it's going to teach you a lot.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And kind of, you know, instead of just saying no, you're kind of giving them some value. That's
exactly.
Says a lot about you as a person. So
yeah, because part of me just wants to be like, dude, screw off. I know way more than you about network marketing. Your approach is terrible. You're literally breaking all the, you know, like I could just shut them down immediately. But the other side of me is like, this person is learning, and hey, I can give value, and I know what it's like to be on the other end of that. And I know that their intentions probably aren't malicious, or they're
right.
Not trying to scam me or anything. They're trying to do their thing, and you got to respect that.
Yeah. So you transition out of the MLM company, and you go and you're living life. How did you get to a podcast? Like, what was the first thought when you were like, huh, maybe I'll start a podcast?
Yeah. Well, it kind of, I don't know when the first time it happened, but like I said, I was traveling a lot and I was listening to a lot of podcasts, not to pass the time, but just like, you know, you're on a plane, you listen to a podcast, you're, you know, you're hanging out you by yourself, you listen to a podcast. And so I was consuming a lot of podcasts during that time when I was abroad and stuff. And the thought crossed my mind a decent bit. Especially, and the funny thing is tying back to the MLM company, I met a lot of really cool people that went on to do really cool stuff. So as I was kind of seeing that happen, I'm like, huh, there's a lot of people that I know that are doing really cool things. You know, Austin Distel, for example, we both know him. And he was gone on to do a lot of stuff. I met him through that MLM company.
Oh, wow.
Which is really funny. You know, so just a bunch of random connections and stuff. And so I had this idea where I was like, you know what? I know how to public speak. I'm comfortable in front of, you know, a microphone or whatever. I know how to carry on a conversation. I think I could do this. But it was kind of like an idea that was tucked away in the back of my head, because, you know, if I wanted to do it, I knew that I wanted to do it big. I didn't want to half-ass it. Kind of like with the Vima thing. I didn't want to like try to do it half-ass and just kind of, I was like, I'm going to drop out of school and go full steam and do this thing full force, you know? And So it's funny because, like you said, how did I come up with that idea? It kind of was just festering on the back burners. And eventually, my friend Graham, he invited me to be on his podcast. And it was a, it was kind of like a no holds barred kind of podcast where he would talk about anything, but it was a secret podcast where it was just on SoundCloud and he didn't tell anybody except for his close friends because he didn't want his parents to listen to it. He didn't, it was kind of like a social experiment almost. Like, you know, it was his last year in college. He wanted to create some cool memories with his friends. So they were on there talking about all kinds of, you know, raunchy stuff, funny experiences. Oh, we did that. Oh, remember when you did that? Or, you know, stuff like that. And, so he didn't share any last names. He used a fake last name on the podcast, all this stuff. And so he invited me to be on it. I said, hey, that I'm honored. That'd be really cool. You know, so I went and did that. And long story short, actually, the project ended up kind of getting canceled on his end. And our episode actually didn't ever come out. But I was so excited by that idea. And I saw how not easy, but how accessible it was. And I just decided, as I was on my way home, I'm like, I'm going to start my own podcast. And I went online, figured it out, and got the equipment, and
yeah, so started going. I think this is a good segue. I'd like to kind of dig into a bit on, like, how did you actually start it? Like, so if podcasts are, like, blowing up right now, it's becoming a primary way people consume various types of contents, everything from, like, news to stories to interviews like we're doing now. Like, and I think there'll be a lot of people listening that are like you, or it's been kind of festering in the back of their head. So, mm-hmm. like, what's step one? Like, you want to start a podcast. Like, what's the first thing that you need to do?
I think step one is really figuring out exactly what your show is going to be before you make it. And that doesn't mean you have to have a final idea of, okay, on episode 500, we're going to be talking about this and all, you know. It doesn't have to be like that. But for you, for example, you have this podcast that you're like, okay, I'm going to talk to people that have side hustles, not full hustles. I'm going to do side hustles. And that's my little niche. And that's a really great way of starting a podcast. Mine is kind of weird in the fact that I don't necessarily have an exact niche, but I think my niche is just really good conversations that are in person. Like, that's kind of the niche that I have, is like interesting conversations with cool people, you know, and that's kind of a broad niche, but I think just having that concept, because there's all kinds of different types of podcasts out there. There's podcasts where it's just one guy talking. There's some podcasts where it's very highly produced and there's characters and it's a fictional, almost like a show, like a radio show. And then there's some podcasts that are music reviews. There's some podcasts that are very, very informational and they're teaching you how to do an exact thing. There's all kinds of different types of podcasts out there. And I think, you know, people would say like, oh, well, I'm really interested in this very, very niche thing, and I don't think anybody else in the world is interested. I'd be very, very, surprised if that was the case, because you would be very surprised at how weirdly niche you can get a podcast and how you can find an audience.
Yeah, I know, speaking on like a really, really, deep niches, I'll say. I listen to a podcast at night often. It's called the Sleep With Me podcast. Mm. And it's a guy who basically, he just has this very soothing voice and he just tells a random ass story about his life. It has no context, no meaning, no nothing. It's just him talking. And that is the podcast.
Yeah.
And you just, his voice is so soothing. You put it on and you fall asleep. Now he's blowing up. It's his full-time gig now. He's got all these sponsors. So like, yeah.
I've heard of that guy.
Yeah.
And he has like a huge Patreon account where people just donate because they're like, dude, you've given me so much value. I've slept every single night because of you. Like, I don't even know how to repay you, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's, so step one is kind of like finding, I guess I'll say like finding who your audience is. Who do you want to speak to and what do you want to speak to them about?
Yeah. And then also I think figuring out what your motivation is behind it too is a big one. Because I think a lot of people look at it as a cash grab. They're like, oh, podcasts are blowing up. It's the next big thing. I'm going to try to become a podcaster, without actually having any real desire for that medium. They just see like this new hot thing and they want to jump on the train. And I don't think that's a way to approach it. It comes off cheesy. I think another thing to do is if you are interested in creating a podcast and you don't actually listen to any podcasts, you should listen to some to figure out what you like and what you don't like. Because on the creator end, you might be thinking, oh, that would be so cool if I added in a sound effect right here. And me personally, when I listen to podcasts and they add in a sound effect, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, that wasn't a real life. It didn't add anything to me. Like, oh, cool, you're adding so much productional value. But to me, it's almost like cheesy. Like, it's, you know, it's not adding it to me. It's actually taking me out of that conversation and going, why did he do that?
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, listening to podcasts and figuring out, oh, I really like what this guy's doing, or, oh, I really hate what this guy's doing, so I'm going to try to make sure I don't ever sound like that guy, or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's a great great piece of advice, is kind of like, how do you want to deliver your content? Is it that one-on-one where it's just you on the microphone? Is it more of a conversation like this? Your approach is all in person, right? Mm-hmm. Mine's a mixed bag. Some in person like we're doing now, some over the internet. Yeah, that's a good I think that's a combo into step one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think also being able to look at an existing podcast as a proof of concept, you know, is pretty helpful too. Like, looking at, for me, for example, my biggest inspiration was Joe Rogan's podcast, because he has a wide variety of guests. He has comedians, he has doctors, he has hunters, he has movie stars, he has, you know, all kinds of crazy guests. And some people in the beginning about my podcast were saying, it's too broad. There's not enough, you're not diving niche enough. And I'm like, well, if Joe Rogan can do it, I can do it too. And that was what kind of drove me. So maybe even finding an inspirational person like, you know, the Tim Ferriss show, or, you know, whoever it might be for you, looking at a show and kind of aspiring, not to copy them, but if you're like, okay, if this show can be successful, then mine is, why can't mine?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Replicate what's working, right? And,
exactly.
And obviously, you're going to put your own spin on it, but you can definitely see what's working, emulate what's working well, and that way you're not reinventing the wheel.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. And actually, I wanted to kind of break this down, because I've thought about this a lot, about what it takes to launch a podcast. And I have a little system that I've broken it down into. I call it the three L's of podcasting. So number one is longevity. And that might seem like a hard thing to tackle in the beginning. But one thing that for me, for example, when I find a new podcast, I'll tell you the three L's right now: longevity, listenability, and the launch. Those are the three L's. So longevity is number one. And I feel like having the appearance of longevity is sometimes even just as powerful as having a 200 episodes. Because, like, for example, I know Ryan here, you are going to be launching a whole bunch of episodes on the front end. And that to me is like, wow, this guy's hitting the ground running. He's taking this very seriously. He's already on episode 20. What the heck? I thought he just started this the other day, you know? And so people see that and they're like, wow. The other thing that I think can convey longevity is your investment into it. Like, how invested are you into it? Because the listener's not going to be as invested as you are, you know, in the beginning at least. So if they can tell, oh, wow, he's got really good audio quality and he's probably invested some pretty good money into some microphones and some equipment and some editing software. Oh, wow. His artwork for the podcast is really high quality and all the promotional stuff is really high quality. He's definitely put some time and investment into this. And so even though you might not have 100 episodes, people can look at your podcast and see the appearance kind of longevity. I think that's one of the biggest things of people taking you seriously, I guess.
Yeah.
Does that
make
sense?
Absolutely. I mean, because it's like when you're looking for a podcast, you're almost window shopping, right? So one of the first thing you see is the artwork, right? Mm-hmm. The cover artwork. And I know when I'm scrolling through, you see some that have like some weird background with some like just text overlay, like some basic like Arial font. And you're like, all right, like this comes off as like a old rusty car, right? And I'm looking for something that's like a Ferrari.
It's like a business card that's like just that you went on Vistaprint and just typed in your information and didn't change anything.
Right.
You chose the like most basic thing ever and you just went with it. You're like, good enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you find that an artwork that's nice and you click into it and then you see the episodes. And then like subconsciously, like you develop like almost like some trust in like, oh, this is going to be quality because there's all these episodes, good artwork. It's like it's marketing more or less.
Yeah. And it's kind of like when you're going to watch a Netflix show if you go on there and you see that there's 7 seasons and it's rated 5 stars and all this, you know, and you've heard good things, there's probably a better chance that you're going to go get invested because you're like, wow, if they made it all the way to 7 seasons, they're doing something right.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
And so that's how I look at podcasts too. If I find a new podcast and I see that there's already literally, like, it's been around for years, there's, you know, I don't really look at the number of, I don't really look at the reviews that much, but one thing that is kind of a telltale sign on iTunes is the number of reviews. Like, if it's got 1,000 reviews on iTunes, good or bad, they're doing something right. There's people listening to it. There's people paying attention to it. If I look and it's been around for a year and it's got, like, you know, a few episodes, I'm like, wow, this guy's uploaded like 1 a month for the past year. Doesn't really seem like he's that heavily involved, you know, and as a listener, you actually, like, kind of like when you watch a TV show, you get invested in the characters and stuff, right? And so the more you quote-unquote spend time with this person, you really are, like, developing a one-sided relationship with the person that's on the other end. And you don't want to start a relationship that you don't know if it's going to be around. You know what I mean? Like, if you think that they might give up on the podcast next month, you're probably like, I don't even want to give this a listen. If they're not even committed to keep making it, I don't even want to commit to listening to it.
Yeah.
You know,
I felt the same. Now that you say that, I've definitely felt the same way. Like, I've clicked into it and I'm like, do I even want to, like, invest the time in getting to know this guy? And if he's not going to post another episode for the next 2 months, like,
yeah, you know? Exactly.
I mean, it'd be like you, like, Netflix, finding a great show on Netflix, and then it's like 3 months before there's like this cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what the hell?
Yep, exactly. Exactly. And that's the beauty of podcasting is, like, it's probably only up to a few, like, the show's not going to get canceled because of, like, the network or, like, lack of viewership. It's all based on the creator's ability to keep going.
Yeah.
So even if they're not making money, they keep going. Even if they're, you know, and that's where, like I said, you've got to really check your motivation and check your own mentality of, why am I actually starting this? Is it to make a quick buck? Because there's way better ways to make a quick buck than starting a podcast. I'll tell you that right now. Yeah. And so, but if your motivation is to provide value, if your motivation is to expand your network, if your motivation is you simply have a huge passion for it, maybe you just want to test your creative abilities, whatever it might be, check your motivation first, because that's going to tell you whether you're going to have the stamina to keep that longevity up.
Absolutely. And, like, this is one of the foundations within the Side Hustle Journal, is, like, that why, right? And you mentioned that there's maybe better ways to make a quick buck than launching a podcast, but, you know, I could also argue that it's just as difficult to launch a blog, to launch a e-commerce site, anything.
Totally.
Like, there's all this front-end work that goes in, and you don't reap the rewards till down the road.
For sure.
If you start a blog, right, it takes months and months before Google even starts picking you up in the search ratings.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what you do, like, it's going to be the exception that you make money overnight, right? That's not the rule. That's the exception.
For sure.
The people that do, you hear these stories because those people are the loudest, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're screaming to the top of their lungs on how quick they made money. But 99% of people are going to have to put in the work up front. So whether it be a blog or a podcast or whatever, you're not going to wake up. You're not going to launch episode 1 and then wake up for episode 2 and have these great sponsors that are paying you $1,000 an episode.
Exactly. Yeah, don't expect Squarespace and LinkedIn and everybody to be knocking on your door on episode 2.
Yeah, cool.
You got to build it up.
We hit longevity. What's mm-hmm. What's the next L?
So I say the 3 L's are longevity, launch, and listenability. So they all kind of go hand in hand. There's not really an order, but I'll go with listenability second, which is I pair it with 2 things. Number 1, listenability, meaning the actual audio quality. Is your gear up to par? And now you don't have to go out and buy thousands of dollars worth of equipment. You don't have to go look at, you know, like I said before, Joe Rogan or, you know, a really professional setup where they've got the highest end equipment because they're already making tons of money. No, like the setup that we're recording on right here, what was like a couple $100, $300 maybe,
yep.
$200.
And I could have got it for cheaper.
Exactly. The one that I use, same deal. I pretty much have a very similar setup. Few $100, but number 1, the preparation for recording will really help with audio quality. Just the little things, like, for example, we turned off the air conditioner, removing that little hum in the background, making sure we were in an environment that wasn't too echoey, you know, all kinds of things you can do in preparation to make your audio quality better. And then also on the post in the back end, changing a few things, maybe removing a little bit of hum, removing a little bit of white noise or whatever. So that can really help out.
Can you tell people like what equipment are you using real quick that you found that works well and kind of what's some price points around that stuff?
Definitely. So I use, so my setup is 100% portable. That was my main goal. If your goal is not to be portable and you want to record all of them in the same location, this setup might not be, it might not be the most ideal. Not necessarily that it wouldn't work, but my goal was portability. So there's other ways you can buy like a USB mic and stick it in your computer and you can use the computer as the recorder and, you know, just buy a microphone. But I wanted a portable device that I could record audio into. And so I chose the Tascam DR40, which is a little, recorder essentially. You've probably seen, like reporters maybe use them. They've got little, microphones on the top, but there's also XLR inputs on the bottom where I plug in two lavalier mics, and I use, I've actually got them right here in my backpack. They are the lavaliers by Movo, M-O-V-O.
And lavalier mics, just for people who might not know the word, are just the ones that like clip on your shirt, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So you'll see a lot of like people in videos or maybe someone on stage, it's like a lapel mic that they just clip onto their shirt. They're super simple, very, very small, very compact. And the model that I'm using is the LV4. And the set that I bought is the LV4O2, which just comes with two microphones. That's what the O2 means. But they're the Movo LV4. And, you know, not to say that, oh, that's the end-all, be-all. I think actually that Ryan's using some different ones, but we have a very similar setup. And basically, that's all I really use is my little Tascam and my little Movo lavalier mics. And I also use a little Anker, power, bank to charge it. And that's pretty much it. And the whole thing, the Tascam thing, I got it used on eBay, I think for like $150. And then I got the microphones on Amazon for $80. So $40 a piece. So, I mean, it was literally like $230, something like that for my whole setup, which is, you know, very minimal. But for someone who's like, I don't know if I'm going to actually do this, it's actually kind of a good thing when you finally make that purchase decision, because it forces you to take it seriously. I know a lot of podcasters use the H4n Pro, and the H1 is a really good thing as well. The only drawback is it doesn't have those inputs on the bottom. So if you're planning on recording with multiple people, I would definitely go with the H4N or the Tascam DR40, because you've got those inputs on the bottom where you can plug in external mics. The H1, you can plug in one
splitter.
You can do a splitter, but it's harder to balance out the audio later. But if you're on a super tight budget, and maybe it's even a challenge to you, how cheaply can you do a podcast? H1 is a great option for sure.
Yeah, cool. So we got equipment. What's next?
Okay. So the other part of listenability is the actual content itself.
Really? That's important.
Right? And so it doesn't matter how good your audio quality is. If you're boring, if you, you know, are just not making it flow, if it's just not working, if people are listening to this and they just want to rip their eardrums out about how dry and boring you are, unfortunately, there's not much I can say on this podcast that will coach you on staying interesting. You know, that's something that's kind of learned, and something that maybe doing more public speaking could help you, or maybe just going out there and talking to more people can help you. But I think the biggest thing with listenability as far as the content goes is having somewhat of a direction. And if it's a conversational podcast like this one, mainly just kind of trying not to ramble too much. I'm guilty of that. You know, rambling is something that ends up happening sometimes. Also, saying like a lot can be kind of irritating. Saying too much can be irritating. But the other thing that people get caught up on is having a moment of silence. Like if we just, like to us, that felt super awkward. But to the listener, it probably didn't seem that long. You know, they're probably like, wait a second, did he stop talking for a second? But I think people are afraid to have even a second of silence. And I think that's one thing to keep in mind when you're doing a podcast. It's like, it's okay to have like a second of silence. No one's going to freak out. No one's going to turn it off, you know, just taking a pause to chill for a second and have that moment of silence is not a bad deal. And then also, if you're doing a conversational podcast, like what we're doing right now, where we're just talking or interview style, one thing that really helped me was asking leading questions. So once someone asked something, once someone said something, instead of just switching topics or switching to the next question that I had or whatever in my head, was saying, oh, cool, why is that? You know, just simply saying that can get them to keep going, get them to keep talking, and or saying, oh, wow, so why did you choose to do that? Or, you know, just asking a simple leading question that's not just a yes or no. Oh, did you have fun doing that? Yes. Okay, next question. You know, it's awkward.
Yeah,
when you
so
do
it's
that.
Like the who, what, where, when, why type questions.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, I'm for sure trying to learn that skill as well, because it for me it's not natural. Like I tend to ask non-leading questions where mm-hmm. people can answer it with yes or no, but I'm trying to kind of perfect that skill, and not only for the podcast, just life in general, because like especially like at work, and I'm managing people at work, I want to like guide them and let them figure out the answer. And that's another way to do that is ask those type of questions. So I think it's valuable, not only for podcasts, but life in general,
for
to be
sure.
able to ask those type of questions.
For sure. And that's the other thing that in the beginning for me, especially, I had a lot of thoughts that were in my head that I wanted to get out on the podcast. And I think sometimes I didn't let my guests speak enough. And re-listening to it, I was cringing the whole time, because I'm like, Andrew, why didn't you just shut up and let the person talk? And I'm guilty of that all the time. I'm a talkative person. You know, unfortunately, I tend to dominate conversations sometimes. And sometimes people look at it as like, wow, why won't this guy shut up? And I know that. And I try to do better about that sometimes. Yeah. But now I do conscientiously try to realize like, okay, this person is a guest on my podcast. I want to showcase them. And if I have my 2 cents, I want to throw in my opinion. That's great too. It is, after all, it's the Andrew Deitch podcast. I'm on every episode. Hopefully people like me by this point. But at the same time, I do try to let my guests talk as much as I can get them to talk, you know? So asking leading questions is very helpful. But if you're hosting a different type of podcast that's not conversational, you know, maybe looking into what other podcasts that are similar to yours, what they do to keep your attention, what they might do that you don't like that you want to avoid, stuff like that. Again, that kind of goes back to listening to others.
Yeah. So if we're just talking about these like conversational interview type podcasts, are you doing anything to like, so if we're still on the theme of listenability, are you doing anything to prepare for those?
Yeah. Most of the time I kind of create a mental outline of where I want to go with it. You know, a few bullet points. I find that if I try to get too specific with the preparation, it can kind of get derailed very quickly. And it's almost like a lot of podcasting is just kind of going with the flow, because you can't predict what the other person is going to say, obviously. And maybe you have this idea that we're going to talk about X, Y, and Z, but then something comes up in the conversation that's really interesting. And if you've only budgeted your time, or you're, you know, maybe you say, okay, I'm only going to do an hour. And then they start talking about something really cool. And you're like, oh, should we go with this? Or do I stay on track with what I'm going to do? So I think err on the side of flowing. You know, I think the more natural the conversation feels, the better it's going to be on the listenability end of things. But as far as preparation, a lot of it is just kind of in the selection of who I'm going to have on. You know, if they seem like they might be kind of awkward or whatever, you know, maybe they're not the right person to have on the podcast, because obviously they've got to be able to speak and carry on a conversation. But also kind of just asking them on the front end what they want to talk about, if there's anything that they specifically want to mention. A lot of it just seems kind of like common sense to me, but maybe to someone else, they might not realize what that kind of preparation would be. So kind of just letting them know. And also, sorry, I'm all over the place, but I have a page on my website actually that I send people to that has kind of an introduction, all the frequently asked questions.
Because I copied that from you, by the way. Well, not
totally
copied yours, but I copied the concept.
Yeah, no, I love that. And definitely copy it, because I think it's a great way of being able to streamline your process, because I was finding that I was answering a lot of the same questions, saying a lot of the same things. And so my podcast guest page is what I call it, is once I ask someone to be a guest, I'm like, okay, cool. Here's my podcast guest page. It should kind of give you an overview of exactly what to expect, should answer any questions, and just reach out to me if you have anything, any other questions that you have or anything that you want to talk about beforehand. And otherwise, we'll do it when we do it.
So we got equipment. We've kind of got a theme for our show, and we'll say we've interviewed people. Like, what's the, we'll call it the I guess the proper word is post-processing, but after the interview's done and you've just got an audio file,
exactly.
What do you do next? Are you editing your podcast yourself? Like, do you recommend that?
So if you're not comfortable with editing, there's a lot of editors that you can hire out there. I know I'm a member of a Facebook group called Podcast Editors Club or something like that, and there's like tens of thousands of people in there that literally just edit people's podcasts for a living. So one thing that I don't like about a lot of those editors is they edit out all the silence, all the ums, all the likes, and they actually edit your voice to make you seem more professional. And I would err on the side of keep some of that stuff in, because the more people realize that you're not perfect, the more relatable you are. Granted, if you suck, like, maybe editing out some of the content is okay. But also that kind of comes on the front end. Is your podcast going to be edited for content, or is it just going to be kind of stream of consciousness, put it out there? That's a decision you have to make. For me, just simply because I like the free form kind of nature of things, I don't edit my podcast for content, really, unless someone asks me later, hey, can you actually edit that part out? I talked about my dad and I realized that I shouldn't have said something, you know, whatever. And I've done that a few times, and I kind of like to be upfront about that on the front end, say, hey, actually in this episode, I did edit out a part of this, so if it feels unnatural, I did that because blah, blah, blah. And kind of filling people in, it, I think, kind of brings people into that experience and lets them feel like, oh, okay, cool, that's awesome. I'm glad that he did that, instead of wondering, like, that felt weird. Why did the conversation jump from this to this all of a sudden, you know? But then as far as myself, I do edit my own podcasts. And one thing that I do is I add in an intro and an outro, where I kind of just say, hey, what's up, everybody, blah, 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 kind of talk about what's going on, and then introduce whoever I'm talking about. One of the biggest things that I love to do is edify that person. Edification is huge. That's one thing that I learned in Vima, actually, the MLM company, was when we did these home events, and I said, all right, my buddy Ryan is going to talk to you about Vima. It's not very exciting. No one's going to care. No one's going to. But if I said, okay, guys, today we have a very special guest, my friend Ryan here, he is killing it in the company. He's making $3,000 a month on the side. He just started 3 months ago. He's actually about to hit the level where he gets a free car. You know, just like talking them up so high that even though me and you might be just like buddies and, you know, whatever, but if I make you seem like a badass, everyone who's listening is going to be captivated. So if you introduce whoever you're going to have on your podcast and make them seem like a badass and make them seem like they're an expert, and, you know, not only is your guest going to be super pumped when they hear the episode, the person listening is going to be excited to hear from that person, because they're, you know, chances are you asked them to be on the podcast for a reason. They're not going to be some lame-o person that you invited on. They're probably pretty cool. So make them sound amazing so that the person listening is pumped, you know? Yeah.
So what do you use, like, software-wise? Like, how are you actually editing it?
So I use Adobe products for pretty much everything. So if you're on a budget, Adobe might not be the best option, just because it can be a little bit pricey. It's like a monthly subscription model that they use. I do know Audacity is a free program that a lot of people use. Also, if you have a MacBook or an Apple computer, GarageBand is pretty good. You can use that as well if you're on a budget. But I use Adobe Audition. It's pretty much, as far as I can tell, pretty industry standard. Lots of professionals use it for editing audio stuff, and it has a lot of very, very powerful tools. So that's what I use personally. And I haven't had any problems with it. I really love it.
Yeah, that's also what I'm using. And regarding the price of the Adobe products, I'll also have put a link in the show notes on that. If you're just a regular Joe like I am, then you can get all the Adobe products for like, I think it's $49 a month. Mm-hmm. It's all cloud-based now. They used to be like, program, well, you still download them on your computer, but you pay $49 a month, you get to pick and choose out of their whole suite of products which you want to use. But if you're a student and you're listening, or if you're a teacher, mm-hmm. right, if you're a yep. student, you can get all of it for like $20 a month or something. $19.99.
It's pretty cheap.
I think very similar for teachers if I remember correctly, but I'll put a link in the show notes regarding that, so if you want to go check out some of the Adobe products. But also just Google Audacity. That's a free program. It looks like it's from the 1980s, but
it does.
I think it still works. It's been around forever. And a lot of people do use it. And also,
I know professionals that use it. I mean, in that podcast editors club group, there's people that do it for a living and they use Audacity. I mean, and the drawback of the Adobe products is, of course, you have to pay monthly. People liked that in the olden days of Adobe that you could just purchase it one time and you had it forever. But the cool thing about having the subscription model is every year they do an update and a refresh, and there's updates constantly. So new things are being added all the time, and you still just kind of pay your monthly fee, which is great because everyone likes new features.
Yeah, and if you have a side hustle and you're trying to be, I'll say, a jack of all trades, right? You could get Photoshop, Adobe Illustrator, Adobe InDesign. I use four or five of their applications pretty frequently. So
yeah, and one cool thing that I do is I'll make all my artwork on Photoshop. I'm pretty fluent in that beforehand. You know, it can be pretty intimidating at first, but you can look up some YouTube videos and learn how to use it. It's a very, very, very powerful tool. You can basically make anything visual on there. Also, Illustrator's great. And then as far as like video content, I use Premiere Pro to edit video, and then Adobe After Effects. There's some cool things you can do, actually. A lot of people now with podcasts, they use, like, for their promos, the little waveform thing where it's got the waveform, so you've got some motion in there. After Effects has an easy tool where you can do that. So just kind of having all those tools at your disposal is pretty powerful, especially if you kind of, like you said, jack of all trades kind of thing, and you're like, wow, that's cool. How do I make that? Chances are there's an Adobe program that can help you make whatever that piece of content is.
Yeah. So are there any other tools? Like, we'll just leave the editing at those programs. So we've got a podcast. Like, how the hell do we get it to people's ears?
That's true. So there's all kinds of ways that you can get it out there. I mean, a lot of people, you know, a cheap option, you can go SoundCloud. Like, you can do it pretty cheaply there. I think it's like for unlimited uploads, it's like $10 a month or something like that. You can do a lot of people that's very popular and also very, very professional. Libsyn, Libsyn. A lot of people use that. There's another one, I think it's called Blueberry. It's like Blubry. And they're basically, what these platforms are, they're hosting platforms where basically your audio is sitting on their servers, and there's kind of all the other streaming applications that someone might use to listen. For example, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, whatever they're using to actually listen. What that'll do is it'll kind of point to their server. So when someone wants to listen to the podcast, it'll actually pull from Libsyn or Blueberry or SoundCloud or wherever the podcast is actually living, and then their player will kind of decipher that and do all the back end stuff, which is pretty cool. And once you kind of get your podcast on iTunes, that's kind of the main place where podcasts are discovered and where most people need to have their podcast. What's cool is a lot of other quote unquote pod catchers is what they call them a lot of times, is basically a podcast application that you'd use to listen to a podcast. A lot of them pull from the iTunes API, which is, I think that's the correct terminology, which is basically like, if your podcast is in iTunes, it'll also pop up in Google Play. It'll also pop up in Stitcher. It'll also pop up in Podcast Addict or Tune Catcher, or whatever, you know, whatever app you're using. If it's in iTunes, it'll also kind of pop up in these other apps, which is a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Very cool. I know I use an app called, I think, Podcast Go. That's when I moved to Android. When I was on iPhone, I was using damn, I cannot remember the name of it now.
Was it a red symbol?
No, I think it was like orange.
Podcast Addict?
No,
maybe?
No.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about. I cannot think of the name, but it's pretty popular.
Yeah, it was orange. It was great.
Yeah,
it was
great. Yeah.
I loved it. But anyway,
there's all kinds of podcatchers. I use Podcast Addict on Android. It's pretty good. You know, there's all kinds. If you're listening to this podcast right now, you know what we're talking about because you're using a form of a podcatcher. Yeah. So whether it's the podcast app that came on your phone or something else, you want to be able to get into people's devices. So getting your podcast hosted, to be honest, off the top of my head, explaining it all is pretty challenging. So I'm sure there's a lot of great YouTube videos and tutorials and blog posts and all kinds of stuff that you can use to get your podcast up and running that way. But yeah.
Cool. So now we have it uploaded. And if I remember correctly, the last L is launch.
Yes, the launch. And so kind of tying into longevity, like I said, you want to have that appearance of longevity at the launch. And so one thing I recommend that I know that you're going to do is kind of blasting a bunch of episodes out at the very beginning. And so the launch is really crucial because if you have what sometimes people do is they call it a soft launch, where they kind of secretly upload some and they don't tell anybody. And then they'll have their quote unquote hard launch where they say, okay, now today is the day. My podcast is live. Everyone go check it out. And everyone, you know, goes and listens and hopefully it's an overnight success. But basically the launch, I'd say, is the most important because that's your first impression. And as everyone knows, you cannot make a second first impression. It's called a first impression for a reason. And so if you put out your podcast on launch day and it looks amateur and it sounds amateur and it's just, you know, not up to par, I hate to break it to you, but someone who's an avid podcast listener is going to have a hard time probably taking your podcast for a chance. And if they listen to episode one and they don't really have a good listening experience, chances are episode two is not going to be that compelling for them. So, you know, I would say that your launch is kind of one of the, you know, you want to make the launch as good as you can make it because you only got one shot at that. You only got one shot at the launch. And if people can tell that you're kind of half-assing it from the get-go and it seems like something that, you know, you're kind of just trying out or you're like, I don't know, maybe I'll do this, you know, I've got this idea, hopefully it works. You know, it just doesn't have that appeal to it. And people are drawn to people that are compelling and confident and that are, you know, hey guys, I really hope you like it. Check it out. Here's 10 episodes. And one thing that I did on my launch was I uploaded what I called episode zero, which was kind of an introduction and also a preview of all the episodes that I had done so far. So I was kind of like, hey, maybe episode one doesn't seem that compelling for you, but maybe episode five with this guy, that might be more up your alley. So go check that one out first. I don't care if you listen to them in order. It doesn't matter. It's not like you have to listen to one through whatever for it to make sense. You could pick up on episode 500 and it'll make sense, you know? So that I think the launch is just something that you should take very, very seriously.
Would you recommend or did you do anything from like a social media aspect to like, hey guys, like, boom, this is what I'm doing?
Yeah. So I love little growth hacks, as I hope a lot of people in here do. If you're listening to this, you know, you're a side hustler, so you probably like these little tactics or whatever. So if this is convenient for you, one thing that I did was I actually launched the podcast on my birthday. So I made it a goal to myself. I'm like, okay, it was like around it was a little bit later. So it was like April of last year when I bought my equipment and everything. And my birthday is May 28th. So I was like, okay, on May 28th, I want to have everything uploaded because on Facebook, on your birthday, everyone goes to your page and writes happy birthday, right? And it literally will give a notification, say, hey, four of your friends have a birthday today. And it, you know, they kind of prioritize you on that day on Facebook. So what I did was, leading up to it, I kind of did a little bit of teaser stuff. And I said, I have a really big announcement coming up, a really big announcement. I think you guys will all be excited about it. And Facebook, for me, was a really good place because I knew that I had friends and family on there that would support me and check it out. And I was pretty proud of what I created. And so I I launched it on my birthday. I made my profile picture, my cover photo for my, it said the Andrew Deitch podcast, and I had a picture, you know, it had my album artwork, and then my cover photo on Facebook, the little banner that goes on your page. It said the Andrew Deitch podcast, now live on iTunes, Google Play, blah, blah, blah. Check this picture's description to find out more. And so on my birthday, I got a lot of traction from that, which was pretty cool. And people were excited. Like, they wrote on my wall, happy birthday. Yo, about to check out the podcast. Thanks, man. And I even actually, I think I said something like, hey, I know most of you aren't going to get me a birthday present, so it would really mean a lot to me if you just went and listened to my podcast and maybe rated it 5 stars on iTunes. That would mean the world to me, you know? And, that was kind of a cool little growth hack that I did there.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. I know I'm fine tuning my launch strategy as we speak. So if you're listening to this now, it's obviously launch, but while we're recording it, we're about 2 weeks out from launch. I'm just building up a big queue, like what Andrew recommended here. And then I'll do a big push that first week. So I'm trying to figure out from a social media perspective still how I'm going to do it, but I have some strategies to try to drive listeners, subscribers, and some reviews, but, definitely take Andrew's advice on, you know, try to think outside of the box on some ways that maybe you can leverage the audience you already have. Even if it's your mom and your dad, right? Yeah. They're obviously, if you ask, they're going to leave a review. Your grandma, she's going to try to figure out how to get on iTunes and leave a review.
Yeah. And one thing that I actually did on mine that I always, one of my biggest things from the beginning was being transparent. I think being transparent and honest and open is one of the biggest things that you can do to create that audience that really likes you and appreciates what you do and respects who you are as a person, you know, because if you're a douche and, you know, it seems like you're kind of shady and you're doing weird stuff, people are going to sense that, you know? So I wanted to be open and honest. So actually on iTunes, I actually, on my own profile, went and rated my podcast as my name as 5 stars. And I said, hey, okay, I'm rating my own podcast, but did you really expect me not to? Hey, just wanted to say thanks for checking it out. If you're on this page right now, that means hopefully you're here to leave a review. I really appreciate it. Let me know. Leave me some feedback, blah, blah, blah. And I thought that was kind of a cool, honest way, because it's like, everyone knows that you probably went and left yourself a 5-star review under like a little fake name or whatever, like, great content, wow, amazing audio quality, Andrew's fantastic, you know. Rather than doing that, I just went up and straight open in the open said, hey, I'm rating my own podcast, but you know what, can you blame me? I'm trying to get ratings. If you can rate me, that'd be, you know. So just little things like that, I think, you know, hopefully some people saw that and thought that was kind of a cool thing.
Yeah. But, so how far are you into your podcast now?
Ooh, so I'm about to upload episode 79 with my man Ryan Helms right here tomorrow. So by the time you're listening to this episode, that episode will be released. This is getting very confusing and meta right now. But yeah, so we're on episode 79 tomorrow, about to hit 80 very soon. So
yeah,
we'll be
flipping the script. So if you don't know my story and kind of how I got started into this, you can go check out Andrew's podcast episode 79 and kind of hear my story, how I got going, how I launched my product on Kickstarter, all that good stuff. You can check it out and go subscribe to his podcast. This has been awesome. We learned about the 3 L's. Like, if you're listening to this podcast, you obviously have a high level overview of everything that you need to launch a podcast. And I think this is super valuable. And, you know, obviously we didn't give you a step-by-step guide to launching a podcast, but we gave you the overview. So,
yeah.
I mean, use the tools that you have out there. Get on YouTube, Google some stuff. I mean, if we told you like these different podcast hosts, like get out there, research them, figure out which one works for you, but you have the foundation now to launch a podcast.
For sure. And maybe this podcast wasn't super technical. Obviously, I think an audio podcast like this wouldn't be the best place to even share technical stuff because you'd have to write stuff down and maybe that's better for a blog post or a video or something. And I think this podcast is really good for, like you said, an overview, but also kind of like the psychology of the podcast because you've got to reverse engineer what happens when someone stumbles upon your page or upon your podcast and how they're going to perceive it because you don't want them to have a bad taste in their mouth. You want them to have a good experience. You want them to stick around and hopefully they make it all the way to the end of your episode. So I think hopefully this put some great thoughts into people's heads about what they need to do to launch their podcast.
Cool, man. So let's wrap up with directing people to where they can find more about Andrew.
So the easiest place is probably just to go to my website, and that's andrewdeitch.com. My name will be listed somewhere on this episode. It's spelled D-E-I-T-S-C-H. And you probably won't be able to remember that off the top of your head, but I'm sure it'll be listed somewhere on this episode, so you'll be able to find me. And I do a lot of promotion on my Instagram account, which is @ADPodcast. Pretty simple. That's an easy way to find me if you're on Instagram. I post a lot of pretty cool promos and stuff like that on there. And that's actually a big way that I direct traffic to my podcast. So if you're interested in Instagram stuff, definitely give me a follow there. But yeah, website's definitely the easiest place. I got links to all my social media accounts. And of course, the actual podcast is on my website too. So.
Yeah. And if you're a cool person and you have some interesting stories and you live in or around Atlanta, definitely hit Andrew up. I'm sure he would love to interview
you. Or if you're cool enough, maybe I'll fly out to you. Who knows? I've done some podcasts in other states and stuff. So actually I've done a couple in, have I done some in a different country? I think I have. So yeah, maybe if you don't live in Atlanta, maybe we'll link up on some travels later on. But yeah, hit me up, man. If you're cool, or if you know some cool people and you're like, this dude has a really cool story and nobody knows about it, hit me up. I'd love to share their story.
Cool, man. Well, thanks a lot, Andrew. Appreciate you swinging by and chatting and educating people on how to start a podcast.
Of course, man. Thanks for having me. And thanks for listening, everybody. If you made it this far, I hope you got some value.
Cool. Awesome. Take care, guys.
Damn, that episode was a gold mine for anyone looking to start a podcast. You can head over to bit.ly/hustletofreedom. That's bit.ly/hustletofreedom to get all the links for everything that Andrew and I recommended in this episode. And don't forget to go subscribe to his podcast, the Andrew Deitch Podcast. That's Andrew D-E-I. T-S-C-H. Just search that in whatever podcast player you listen to. Hit that subscribe button. Until next time, keep hustling.